So he's, the pedagogue continues, the will of the adult must be a fortress. Again, the child has become the enemy, the threat, the opponent. Continuing, inaccessible to duplicity or define, or this most duplicitous person. This is obviously the psychological term called projection. Inaccessible to duplicity or defiance and granting admittance only when obedience knocks at the door. And that's unquote. And Alice comments, when still in diapers, the child learns to knock at the gates of love. And I wouldn't call that love though, Alice. With obedience. And unfortunately, often does not unlearn this ever after. And then she quotes another pedagogue. Turning now to the second major point, how to instill obedience. We begin by showing how this can be done at a very early age. Pedagogy correctly points out that even a baby in diapers has a will of his own and is to be treated accordingly. And Alice comments, if treatment of this sort is carried through consistently enough and early enough, then all the requirements will have been met to enable a citizen to live in a dictatorship without minding it. He or she will even be able to feel a euphoric identification with it, as happened in the Hitler period. And then she quotes a pedagogue, for the health and vitality of a political commonwealth owe just as much to the flourishing of obedience to law and authority as to the prudent use of energy of its leaders. Likewise, in the family, in all matters of child rearing, the will that gives orders and the one that carries them out must not be regarded as antagonistic. They are both the organic expression of what is actually a single will. And my comment, I believe it's in this light that we can best understand the guidance that Bentham provides in his quote unquote logic of the will, attempting to make totalitarian control into a science. Continuing with Alice's comment on this notion of the total unity in objective in priorities of the victim with the oppressor, she says, just as in the symbiosis of the diaper stage, there is no separation here of subject and object. If the child learns to view corporal punishment as a necessary measure against quote-unquote wrongdoers, then as an adult, he will attempt to protect himself from punishment by being obedient and will not hesitate to cooperate with the penal system. In a totalitarian state, which is a mirror of his upbringing, this citizen can also carry out any form of torture or persecution without having a guilty conscience. His will is completely identical with that of the government. Now that we have seen how easy it is for intellectuals in a dictatorship to be corrupted, it would be a vestige of aristocratic snobbery to think that only the uneducated masses are susceptible to propaganda. Both Hitler and I think it's just the opposite. Both Hitler and Stalin had a surprisingly large number of enthusiastic followers among intellectuals. Our capacity to resist has nothing to do with our intelligence. Our capacity to resist has nothing to do with our intelligence, but with the degree of access to our true self. Indeed, intelligence is capable of innumerable rationalizations when it comes to the matter of adaptation. Educators have always known this and have exploited it for their own purposes, as the following proverb suggests, quote, the clever person gives in, the stupid one balks. Unquote. For example, we read in a work on child rearing by Grunewald from 1899, quote, I have never yet found willfulness in an intellectually advanced or exceptionally gifted child. Unquote. And I comment on this that this is evidence not of giftedness in the child, but rather of the extent to which a child will and so must go to capture the love of elusive parents. It's not lack of intelligence that makes us balk, but rather a connection to an alternative allegiance, i.e. the earth, through our relations. Continuing, such a child can in later life exhibit extraordinary acuity in criticizing the ideologies of his opponents, and in puberty, even the views of his own parents. Because in these cases, his intellectual powers can function without impairment. Only within a group, such as one consisting of adherents of an ideology or a theoretical school that represents the early family situation, will this person on occasion still display a naive submissiveness and uncritical attitude that completely belie his brilliance in other situations. Here, tragically, his early dependence upon tyrannical parents is preserved, a dependence that, in keeping with the program of poisonous pedagogy, goes undetected. This explains why Martin Heidegger, for example, who had no trouble in breaking with traditional philosophy and leaving behind the teachers of his adolescence, was not able to see the contradictions in Hitler's ideology that should have been obvious to someone of his intelligence. He responded to this ideology with an infantile fascination and devotion that brooked no criticism. And I comment, what distinguishes our groups, our core selves, our open tribalism that we form is our focus on becoming fully developing individualities through self and soul sufficiency. How else inoculate ourselves from the seductive pull, given our common experience under class, of abandonment, of dependency, i.e., of returning to infancy in order to attempt yet again to win love and acceptance? Continuing with Alice, in the tradition we are dealing with, it was considered obstinacy and was therefore frowned upon to have a will and mind of one's own. It is easy to understand that an intelligent child, and I think that's obviously an unnecessary qualification, I've never found one who wasn't, would want to escape the punishments devised for those possessing these traits, and that he or she could do so without any difficulty. What the child didn't realize was that escape came at a high price.